At 22, Julie Barton lay collapsed on her New York apartment floor while a pot of water boiled over on the stove. She looked normal enough, tired, baggy clothes, choppy hair, but inside, she was shattering. That same day, hundreds of miles away in Ohio, a golden retriever puppy named Bunker Hill entered the world blind, deaf, and helpless, searching for his mother's warmth. What happened when these two broken souls found each other wasn't just a rescue story. It was a profound lesson about what actually heals us when everything else fails. Depression doesn't announce itself with fanfare. It seeps in quietly, filling the spaces where hope used to live. For Julie, those spaces had been emptying since childhood, when her older brother Clay made terror a daily routine. He chased her down hallways, pinned her down to punch her, once shoved her into a door hinge so hard she woke in a pool of blood with a crescent moon scar on her temple, a slow leak that drained me of hope, self-love, and faith. Her parents loved her but couldn't see what was happening. Her father worked endless hours as a litigator. Her mother sometimes hid during the fights, believing this was normal sibling rivalry. At 9, Julie's journal revealed what her voice couldn't. "I'm really sad when I'm alone, and I really feel hurt when my brother hurts me." Clay carved his verdict into her door jamb. "Loser, lesbian, whore, everyone hates you." These words became her internal narrative. Her childhood dogs became sanctuaries. Midnight, a cockapoo found during a blizzard, made breathing easier. During Clay's attacks, Midnight hid under the bed, emerging afterward to comfort her. When Midnight died, possibly from injuries sustained while hiding from violence, Julie saw her father cry for the first time. Later came Blarney, an Irish setter who looked at her like I was an angel. When a school bus struck him, she heard Clay crying through the wall and knocked gently 3 times. After silence, 3 knocks came back, a rare moment of connection. College and New York brought different wounds. Her relationship with Will began like white light, a thunderclap, but crumbled in the city's harsh glare. On April 16, 1996, Julie's mind gave out. Suicidal thoughts flooded in as she drifted on her kitchen floor. In the shower, water felt like an angel's touch, making her weep as she contemplated ending everything. When her mother arrived from Ohio, Julie could barely stand. Returning home felt disorienting. The familiar garage and screen door triggered memories of "everyone hates you" echoing endlessly. Her parents loved her but didn't know how to reach her. Her mother avoided eye contact, terrified of saying the wrong thing. Her father broke routine to embrace her immediately, asking, "How you doing?" unlocking her tears. When they asked what happened, Julie could only say, "I just hate being." For 3 weeks, she slept past noon, stared at couch cushions, wished to sleep forever. When her mother asked about plans, Julie threw a pillow at her face, screaming, "Just fucking go." Guilt pulled her back into black sleep. Then, one afternoon, her father came home early. Despite her protests, he picked her up and carried her outside. "We're just going for a little walk," he said gently. The fresh air lifted the darkness as she confessed, "I don't know what's wrong with me, Dad." He assured her she was still beautiful and smart and strong. Julie's parents took her to Dr. Miller, a psychiatrist who looked like someone's mom. Despite her steely exterior, Julie broke down, confessing everything: Clay, her distant parents, losing her boyfriend, hating herself. The diagnosis? Major depression, first episode. She felt validated yet ashamed, adding another label to her collection: ugly, weird, stupid, fat, unlikable, and now depressed. She initially refused Zoloft. Medication altering her brain seemed absurd. After her father researched SSRIs and she read symptoms matching her experience, she relented. "Okay," she told her parents, "why the fuck not? It's just my brain." While waiting for medication to work, her mother helped search classifieds for puppies. Julie studied breed guides, focusing on golden retrievers for their trainability and loyalty. On June 26, 1996, they drove to a countryside farm. One puppy approached Julie, sat at her feet, and looked up with expressive brown eyes. She felt chosen, a surge of confidence she hadn't felt in months. This one, she declared, holding him as he trusted her with his weight. Bunker's first night was restless. Julie crated him beside her bed, comforting his whimpers. At midnight, she crawled partway into the crate to coax him inside. As he curled against her chest, she realized this was the first time in months she was reassuring another living thing, and she felt capable of it. His excited barks woke her at 6:45. For the first time in months, she actually wanted to get out of bed. No dread, just readiness. Standing barefoot in the yard watching him play, she caught her mother at the window, smiling at her daughter awake, laughing, alive. At 11 weeks, Bunker walked awkwardly, tripping over air. Watching him pulled her into the present moment, the realization that he genuinely liked her, with no reason to fool or judge her, lifted doubt she'd always carried. Then the darkness returned unexpectedly. She sat on the couch thinking she'd failed. Just getting a dog couldn't cure her. But Bunker sat on her feet, looking up curiously, his puppy energy completely contained. She remembered her therapist's advice to accept sadness rather than fight it. With Bunker witnessing without judgment, she let the sadness in fully. The desperation dissolved. The negative thoughts felt untrue. Dog medicine. I'd found it, and I swallowed it whole. Months later in Seattle, Bunker collapsed at the dog park with severe bilateral hip displacement, requiring $4,000 in surgeries. With only $400 in her account, Julie faced losing her emotional anchor. Roommate Melissa didn't judge, just asked, "So what do we do?" Chris organized the Bunker Kegger fundraiser through his music connections. Even Greg, whom Julie had hurt during their brief relationship, offered his $2,000 life savings, a generosity that shattered her assumptions about human nature. The party transformed crisis into celebration. Friends from across Seattle, baristas, students, dog park regulars, even strangers arrived with cash and treats, raising nearly $4,000 by night's end. Throughout Bunker's recovery, Julie discovered unexpected strength. What surprised her most? Finding herself smiling, absolutely certain Bunker would heal and run again. 2 months after Bunker's second surgery, they returned to Merrymore Park, where he had first collapsed. This time, he bounded from the car, running with his new bionic hips. Not fast, but joyfully. At the creek's edge, he circled Julie 3 times and howled deeply. She whispered, "No, my love, thank you." 4 years later, Greg and Julie married with Bunker as their ring bearer in a tuxedo. Julie continued managing her depression with medication, learning it was as essential to me as water. In 2007, when Julie was 7 months pregnant with their second daughter, Bunker was diagnosed with cancer. 10 days later, his breathing became shallow. Greg grilled him a steak for his final meal. At the vet's office, when the injection entered his leg, his soul left the room. Every color changed. Julie lay with her head on his lifeless body, thanking him for her life. Years later, when Julie took Bunker's ashes to scatter in the ocean, the tide brought the box back to shore, as if Bunker was telling her he would always be with her. Bunker didn't cure Julie's depression, but he gave her something irreplaceable, a reason to rise, a being who needed her when she felt useless, a love so pure it crowded out the voices telling her she was worthless. Healing takes courage, community, and sometimes a soul with 4 legs and unconditional faith in our worth.